Hey guys, Bill Spadia here. Welcome to a special episode of our speaking podcast. As I told you, we're covering a variety of different issues from speaking politics to speaking entertainment. And we wanted another way to get you the serious and longer conversations that I don't always have time for when I'm on the air. You know, sometimes we can have a conversation and it's 2 or 3 minutes, but there's so much more to the story. So I want to bring in our special guest for this speaking podcast, Kristen Hansen, who, as you may remember from the radio broadcast, she is the widow of J.J. Hansen, former U.S. Marine, a man who battled brain cancer, eventually succumbed to it. But because he stood so strong against physician-assisted suicide, and because he stood up so strongly for his life and his life with dignity, he gave his family almost another 3 years past the diagnosis that he would be gone. Kristen, welcome to the podcast. Thank you. Thanks for joining me.
Bill, thank you so much for having me.
Let me just say, first of all, just for people out there to hear you, I mean, to hear the strength in your voice, having lost your husband and the father of your kids, what's your day-to-day like? I mean, is this... What is it like that this is so real to you? You hear these politicians out there talking about this issue on both sides of it without necessarily the reality of what you experienced.
It was nothing short of the worst fear that you have in your life. Most people's greatest fears is losing the one that you love, the ones that you love. And that is so, so very difficult. And the reason I can be on here today speaking with you is that JJ taught me by example. I fell in love with JJ because he made me want to be a better person. And I'm so grateful to him for all the things that he showed me through the way he lived his life, serving other people. But I'm most grateful to him for what he taught me in the way that he chose to live when he knew that he was dying. He continued to be concerned about others before himself, and he coined the motto, every day is a gift. And that is so very true. All any of us have is today. None of us know what tomorrow will bring. So that's how I get through, one day at a time, doing what I can do today to make it the best day that I can, and focus on what's good in this day.
As a young mom, before we get to the whole discussion of assisted suicide and what is happening in politics today, where I think there's been a devaluation of life itself and, you know, people putting the priority on ending suffering instead of valuing your gift and overcoming suffering, which is a totally different thing. What was it like as a young mom? How do you prepare to lose your husband like that?
You know, it's difficult to go through this just as a wife, but it was so very difficult to go through this knowing that James was losing his daddy. He was old enough when JJ passed to know very much the loss he was experiencing. And as hard as that was, though, I was so thankful for the time that he did get with JJ, because when JJ was first diagnosed, James was just one. If JJ had passed away at that point, we wouldn't have had the time and the memories that we were able to create together. We made countless videos and took tons of pictures and just focused on enjoying our time that we had together, and we'll always have that now. So as hard as it was, I am so thankful for that time that we had past his diagnosis, which we didn't expect to have.
You know, I had on the show on the earlier today, I had somebody call who was a veteran. He had Parkinson's disease, and he was so upset and angry and yelling on the phone. And I so felt for him, talking about how dare I, as a healthy person, even have an opinion on whether or not someone should have the right to kill themselves. And I said, so I brought up the story that you had shared with me on the air that JJ said to you. Thankfully, he didn't have that availability, because there were dark times that may have cut short that 2.5+ years that you had.
Right. Well, you know, I think that it's very difficult, because the way assisted suicide is being presented in the media, proponents are making it seem that these laws are really about one individual's choice, that it's not going to impact other people. This is just adding additional choice. And they focus on the pain and suffering piece so that other people who may have very serious questions and are focused on what are the potential dangers of these laws, they want your knee-jerk reaction to feel badly about even thinking about questioning these laws. But the reality is that these laws impact everyone, whether you are terminally ill or if you are living with a disability or if you're dependent on your health insurance to cover the care that you need. So my heart goes out to anyone who is experiencing serious illness. I walked that journey till the very end with JJ. But I think that people think very differently when you have the longer conversation and you discuss how these laws are written and the very real dangers that are involved.
So
that individual realize they may not be able to get coverage for the medical care that they need, they may think very differently.
You had pointed out there are three main issues, right? And that first one was the fact that you could end up being denied life-saving or life-extending health care if this option were to be made available.
Right, Bill. So proponents like to say that this has been legal in Oregon for, you know, two decades now.
Yeah. There's 97.
Yes.
They made it legal. Yeah.
So, you know, they say not a single case of abuse or coercion, but that's simply not true. When this law became legal in Oregon, there were a couple of instances where insurance companies actually sent physical letters to the patient saying that they were denying coverage for the treatment that the patient wanted and the doctor requested, the doctor wanted it, and offering assisted suicide instead. We have a case of Barbara Wagner, and you can go on the internet and find her videos where you see the letter, and her doctor was requesting chemotherapy for her, and her insurance company denied coverage and offered assisted suicide instead.
There
are a couple other cases.
It's heartbreaking and shocking. It's so disturbing.
You know what's even more shocking, Bill, is that we have recent examples of patients who were not terminal if they had received the treatment that they needed that their doctor was requesting. We have Dr. Brian Callister from Nevada, and about 2 years ago now, he had two patients who ended up in his hospital. They were tourists. One was from Oregon and one was from California. And they both, within a couple of weeks of each other, they both ended up being in his hospital and had terminal illness. And he called their medical insurance directors requesting that they be transferred to their home states because that's where they wanted to be. And he requested life-saving treatment for them. These patients, if they had received the treatment he requested, had a 70% chance of a cure.
Wow.
These were not terminal patients if they had received the medical treatment they needed. But what ended up happening was the medical insurance director for both of these patients, two different insurance companies, deny coverage for the treatment and asked on the phone if Dr. Callister had considered assisted suicide for these patients, even though they never requested it and he never requested it.
It's amazing. It's amazing. So the first point is the insurance. The second point is that there's an opportunity in some of these terminal cases to actually solve the problem and cure the ailment.
Yes. I mean, we saw firsthand that even if you have the worst of the worst, most aggressive forms of cancer, glioblastoma is arguably one of the deadliest forms of cancer. 70% of patients die within 1 year. You can still outlive that prognosis. Because of the internet, we became friends with other patients who were 5, 10, 15, 20 years out past that initial diagnosis with glioblastoma. So it's so difficult for a doctor to predict who those patients are going to be when they're first giving that diagnosis.
What do you say to people? I mean, you must get, I can't imagine the hate and the vitriol you must get on social media and everything. I mean, I'm just basing on the one call I got today where you know, like people become unhinged and they personalize it, that somehow you're taking away their right to end their suffering. That's kind of how they've couched it. Sad.
You know, it's difficult. It's a difficult thing to talk about. Death is something that very few of us want to talk about it in the best of circumstances. It's, you know, regardless if it's in this situation, it's controversial because of the way it's being portrayed by proponents. But I can tell you that I have been to countless meetings with legislators. I've been to public debates with both sides where JJ debated the proponents. I've spoke with friends, family members, other people who are just interested in learning more. And I can tell you, in majority of the cases, when people have enough time, you know, that 15, 20-minute conversation to really learn about how these laws are written and why they're dangerous, more often than not, those people leave the conversation also questioning these laws. And even if they agree with the idea that this should, somebody should be able to have this choice, they realize that in reality, it impacts everyone, and that's far too dangerous.
So what's the plan going forward? How many states have this legal?
You know, this year, so far, 16 states have defeated bills for proposed legislation.
No kidding.
And I think there were about 20 so far this year. So we have a couple of states that are still a question mark, New Jersey being the big one.
Yeah.
But I think that what most people need to know is that these laws have been proposed for years. I mean, there's been hundreds of laws put forth since, you know, when this first became legal in Oregon. And so majority of the time these laws are defeated. It's only a very small handful of states where this has become legal. And there's a very well-funded lobbying organization that's pushing these laws across the United States.
Where's the money coming from? I mean, is this, you know, like I think of the, just what you were saying on the treatment. Right. So I think of some of these places, like I think my daughter lives in London, and the you know, was just horrified watching little Charlie Gard pass away, and the doctors effectively doing nothing, wouldn't let him out of the hospital, wouldn't let him go to Italy, even though they offered to take him. And I think that whole idea that it's all about cost and leveling the playing field, and the fact that you've got medicine in the UK that is effectively dumbed down versions of what we can get here in the US because they've got to make it equitable so everybody has it. And I say, you know, that kind of healthcare is great as long as you're not sick. And it, right, and the question is, how much do you think this plays in that the insurance companies and some of these big businesses look at this and say, what's the more cost-effective route for us?
You know, it's impossible to say. It's very difficult to track who the largest donors are, but you have to wonder. And, you know, I'm so grateful for our insurance company and that we had coverage, but I can tell you that even though we had very good private insurance, I still had to go to battle with our insurance company. And so many times I left those phone calls in tears because it wasn't easy to advocate for JJ and make sure that he had the care that he needed. And that was without assisted suicide on the table. And at the end of the day, you know, they're profit-driven businesses. And you have to wonder, are they going to do the right thing or are they going to do the cheap thing? Mm-hmm. And death will always be the cheapest treatment, quote-unquote.
Well, and that's it. I mean, and as a believer in the for-profit medicine, because I think you will get the better care, that said, you've got a great point. And if the legislatures enable those decisions by empowering it and saying, no, 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 here's the cheaper choice, go with that, then I don't know that you can ever put that genie back in the bottle.
No, and I can tell you this, that Derek Humphrey, he was the original founder of the Hemlock Society, which was the one that pushed euthanasia and assisted suicide years ago. It eventually evolved into Compassion and Choices after they realized that that's much more palatable, a beautiful rebranding of this concept.
Right.
He is quoted in his book that he wrote in 2000 saying that in the final analysis, economics, not the quest for broadened individual liberties, or increased autonomy will drive assisted suicide to the plateau of acceptable practice. So there, right there,
right there.
The horse's mouth.
Yeah, he knew it. They knew what they were doing. It's very sad because I feel like, and I've heard this from a lot of disabled activists, and I've heard it from you. They really prey on people who are literally at their weakest moment, sometimes both physically and mentally.
You know, It's really scary to think that we're carving out a group of individuals and saying that, you know, if you are healthy, otherwise healthy, and you go to your doctor and you express, you know, symptoms of depression and suicidal ideation, that you're going to get suicide prevention. But if based on your health, you are not going to get suicide prevention if you express those same thoughts.
Scary.
Anyone with a disability sees the implications of that.
What do you want to say to someone? Because I wish I had you there in the studio when I was talking to this veteran, and he was so impassioned and so upset and so scared of what the future could hold, and just resentful of, you know, saying, "Oh, you're healthy. You know, how can you even relate to what I'm saying?" What do you say to someone who is in that situation and they are suffering? I mean, there are some debilitating diseases out there that they are, you know, the throes of death at the end, just something that you, it's very hard to even contemplate. But what do you say to that person?
I say that I understand, because I've been in that situation, and the thought of losing your own life or someone that you love so very much is scary. And I think that often the messaging plays on those fears and wants people to think that they have more control over that. But there's so many other things that we can do to help patients at the end of life to address all of those concerns without assisted suicide. We need to improve access to hospice and palliative care and just address the issues that patients are facing at the end of life. If you look at Oregon, where this has been legal the longest, pain and suffering never makes it into the top five reasons why patients are requesting assisted suicide. It has to do with psychosocial existential suffering, so loss of autonomy, fear of being a burden, inability to do the things you once enjoyed. Those are areas that we can address, and we can do a better job of helping patients who have those concerns. This really isn't about pain and suffering. That just really makes a great five-second soundbite and is very emotional.
Yeah, yeah. So what's ahead for you? How long does this fight continue? Is it continuing until you're done, until you win?
I think that this has been a fight that we've been fighting for a long time now. So I think that it's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah. So are you, what's next in terms of New Jersey? Are you going to be coming to the legislature to testify?
You know, if that situation presents itself where they have a hearing and they're listening to testimonies, I've testified before the New York State Health Assembly, mm-hmm. Assembly Health Committee. And when I meet it, I go and I discuss our situation and why we're opposed to it. So I definitely.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Kristen, for sharing your story. Honestly, like the courage and the strength and the resolve that you have, you are truly an inspiration, having gone through what I think most husbands and wives consider the unthinkable. How do I even wrap my head around losing my wife or losing my husband? And, you know, this is especially. You look at today's world that there's such a callousness when it comes to healthcare. It's so, you know, related to money and every other thing. And like what you're showing in the face of this onslaught, it's so hard to fight against this politically correct culture that all of a sudden defines something as black and white and you lose your voice. And it's so sad and it's costing people their lives. So thank you for the strength and courage that you're showing. And thanks for spending the extra time. I wanted to have this conversation on the air, but you know, traffic, weather, ads, everything else, never enough time. But I hope we stay in touch, and I'd love to have you back on the show. I'd love to have you on Chasing News, my show on Fox TV, and just to continue to spread this word. So how can people get in touch with you? Where do they follow you? Well, where do they get information? Because I think there are a lot of people out there that will listen to your explanation and say, okay, there's clearly another side to this conversation than what I've heard in the general media.
Thank you, Bill. And I can say that the reason I'm here speaking with you and I'm trying to have the courage and the strength to do that is because JJ was opposed to this even in his final days. And one of the last things he asked of me was that I keep telling our story. And so I'm here fulfilling a promise to him.
Wow.
And I thank you for sharing this information with all of your listeners, and anyone who's interested in getting more information can go to the Patients' Rights Action Fund's website. It's www.patientsrightsaction.org, and there we have updated information daily and also a whole list of video and print resources for individuals who want to see Dr. Callister's video or learn more about the very real dangers with assisted suicide.
All right, Kristen, thank you. We'll keep praying for you and your family.
Thank you so much, Bill.
You take care. Bye-bye. We have a couple new sponsors in 2018. Rob Dukansky of RE/MAX First Advantage. You can reach him at 855-350-1015 or online at robsellsnj.com. True story, Rob sold my house in 3 days. I spent a lot of time in real estate. I'm a licensed broker in a few states, and I can tell you, Rob Dukansky is the best. We're happy to have him on board, Speaking Millennial. Our other big sponsor for 2018, CSI Group. The CSI Group, you can reach them at 1-800-TAX-LAWS or CSICPA.com. This is a family business, but they've got locations all over New York and New Jersey. And I'm going to tell you, taxes are too complicated to go it alone. Don't think that you're going to go online and just plug and play and get it done. You don't want to have a letter from the IRS a couple years after you file your taxes and find out you made a big mistake. And the CSI Group will give you a free consultation. So all you got to do is call them at 1-800-TAX-LAWS and they will help you out. Remember, you don't know what you don't know. I'm happy to talk about one of our sponsors, great sponsor, good friend, Vinny Brand, owns the Stress Factory in New Brunswick. The website is stressfactory.com. Vinny Brand runs one of the great comedy clubs, honestly, in the country. Not only does he have A-list comics coming in almost every single week, but the show is great. The food is fantastic. The staff, the service, there's parking right next door. If you've not discovered the Stress Factory in New Brunswick, you've got to get there. Go to stressfactory.com and buy your tickets. It's a great night out, reasonable cost, absolutely hilarious entertainment, great food and hospitality. Stressfactory.com.
Looking for a car, new or used? This is Jay Black to tell you there's no better destination than our friends at the Flemington Car and Truck Country family of brands. Located on Route 202 and 31 in Flemington and at Flemington.com. Here you will find 16 automotive brands plus over 500 available certified pre-owned vehicles to fit every budget. You'll get the financing, the trade-in value, and the credit you need, and dependable vehicle service maintenance that delivers peace of mind. Choose from Ford, Lincoln, Audi, Volkswagen, Porsche, Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, Cadillac, Infiniti, Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, Ram, BMW, and Subaru. Shop them all, knowing every Flemington Car and Truck Country location has earned the coveted dealer-rated customer satisfaction award for 2017 based on your reviews. The Flemington Car and Truck Country family of brands, an honest, straightforward organization that has been satisfying customers for over 40 years. Family, independent, not corporate. Visit any of their 8 dealership locations on routes 202 and 31 in Flemington or at Flemington.com. There's a lot of really cool stuff about our new sponsor, Tito's Handmade Vodka. And I could tell you about all of it. I could tell you how great it tastes. I could tell you how it's the best way to relax after a hard day. I could tell you that it's distilled from corn, so it's gluten-free. I could tell you that it's made right here in America, in Texas. And not just Texas, the best part of Texas, Austin. It's the best part of Texas. I tell you the thing I love most about Tito's Handmade Vodka. They use old-fashioned pot stills and they taste test every batch. It's the same way that they make fine single malt scotches and high-end French cognac. Why is this amazing? Well, it's amazing because, as John F. Kennedy said, we don't go to the moon because it's easy, we go to the moon because it's hard. And this is a harder way to make vodka, but it makes for better vodka. That's why it's handmade vodka, and that's why you gotta go out and get Tito's Handmade Vodka right now.